We're doing Rav Chalap on Parashat Shemot. We'll dedicate our learning to Elisheva Bat Curtis. We're learning the seventh speech on the Parsha, Tikkun HaGalut. What does exile help us fix? Shtei B'chinot Yesh B'inyan HaNitzotzot. There are two concepts when we speak about Nitzotzot. Nitzotzot are sparks. And we say there's this concept that there are sparks in the world, and we have to gather them and uplift them. And one of these concepts is that Israel among the nations has all kinds of sparks that we have to gather from the nations. Likuta nitzotzot v'halatan. There's the idea of gathering sparks, that there's potential for holiness all around you. Just like sparks are little embers, they're potential fires. You have to get, Israel has a task of gathering them. And then there's the idea of ha'alatan, of elevating them. V'shtein nasu al yedei Yosef. Yosef accomplished both. It says, Vailaket Yosef et kol hakesef hanimtza. Yosef gathered all the silver, all the money in Egypt. That means he gathered all the forces of Egypt. Money represents force, power, right? A poor person is considered like he's dead. Life is the ability to affect. Life means I can affect. The more I can affect, the more life I have. The more a person has wealth, the more they can affect the world. They can, doesn't mean they do. So Yosef gathers all the wealth of Egypt. That means Yosef gathered the strengths, the capacity of Egypt to affect. This aspect, these two aspects of gathering strength and uplifting strength, that's the two concepts are divided between Menashe and Ephraim. Menashe hu hamlaket. Menashe is the one who gathers. He unites. Ephraim hu amale. Ephraim is the one who uplifts. Vu hamachnis le'aretz Yisrael. That's why Yoshua, who's the descendant of Ephraim, he's the one that leads us into the land of Israel. He uplifts the nation. Ulam shnei b'chinot eilu. But we have to know that these two aspects, that we have to work in the world to gather all that good, and we have to uplift all that good, that means that we have to fix something that's not right. That means ever since the world has gone down through the transgression of Adam and Eve, so then there's this mixture of good and bad. In Egypt, there's a lot of good that has to be distilled from the bad. In the world, we live in a world where there's evil and good mixed together, and they have to be distilled. And that's what we call the sparks, where you're gathering the sparks. You're taking out what's good and pure from that mixture where not everything is good and pure. Now, if you think about this, Chassidus really likes this idea because it's a very strong idea. We like to think that the world is good or bad. This is a good person, this is a bad person. And suddenly we're taught, no. Even within the bad, there's good. And part of a Jew's job is to collect that good, is to see that good, is to bring out that good, to fan it into a flame. That's the beautiful song of Shuli Rand, Nekuda Tova ve'od Nekuda Tova. One good point.
Good in that person, they say, right? From the deeper sources, that inspires someone to be Shuba.
Yeah. Omnam gavoa mehim hu tikun hu likut olamot va'alatan. But there's a higher aspect of gathering worlds and uplifting them. Zeh haya gam kodem achet. This idea of putting worlds together and uplifting them, that was always in the world. That's not because of Adam's transgression. Adam's job was to gather worlds and reveal Hashem's light in all the worlds. And then to continuously uplift them, internally, externally, without limits. Etzel Moshe ne'emar, when Moshe is born, so the Torah tells us, so again, the first concept we learned is that there's gathering worlds together, which we could understand as gathering people together, gathering nations together. There's gathering worlds together and uplifting them. And then there's gathering sparks. Sparks is when you have good and bad mixed together and you have to take the good out of the bad and unite it and then uplift it. Worlds are things that always existed. That's not a result of our transgressions. By Moshe, it says Moshe was born, so his mother saw him, and she saw he was good. Moshe's goal was to unite worlds and uplift them. That we see reflected in his two children, Gershom and Eliezer. Gershom, who am garesh atzlalim shebol olamot. Gershom comes from the word garesh, to chase away. His purpose was to chase away the shadows in the worlds. וללקטם שיהיה אור השם נקלט בהם. Gershon represented that responsibility to bring worlds together to make the worlds capable of accepting Hashem's light. There's shadows in the world. There are places that are dark in the world. Those have to be removed. Eliezer continuously propels forward, uplifts. It's not just unifying. That's Elokei Avi Be'ezri. My father's God has helped me, he names Eliezer. Eliezer, my father's God has been helping me. That's the idea that I can continuously uplift, not just unite. V'zeh ma she'nemar, that's what it says in Chronicles. V'yu b'nei Eliezer rechavya ha'rosh u'b'nei rechava ravu lemala. It says that Moshe had a son Eliezer. Eliezer's children, they numbered greatly. It doesn't say how great. So that's the medrash we discussed last night, that the Talmud Tractate Brachos says that when Moshe refused to allow the Jewish people to be killed, and he should be the progenitor of the Jewish people, Hashem said, fine, I won't punish the Jewish people as harshly, but I will still give you that blessing. And that's derived from this verse that says they numbered greatly. The Talmud says, how greatly? What does that mean? It means more greatly than all of the Jewish people. That Moshe merited through his son Eliezer to have more than 2 million descendants. So Rav Chalap says that's a reference to the capacity of Eliezer to affect the world, the capacity of Eliezer to continuously help the worlds grow. Eile habchinot hem shtaim shein arba. So these aspects are two that manifest themselves in four. You have the idea of uniting the sparks of the world, likuta nitzotzot v'alatan, uniting the sparks and uplifting them, v'likuta olamot, uniting worlds and uplifting them. Shem b'chinat shtei hashemot Yaakov Yisrael. These two aspects are reflected in the names Yaakov and Yisrael. Yaakov u'b'chinat alikut. Yaakov is the idea of just uniting things. We see that in utero. It says Yaakov is grabbing his brother's heel. What's he doing there? Our sages say he's trying to pull that which is good in Esav. U'b'chlal avodat alikut husod ha'gerushin. Part of gathering what's good is the idea of chasing away that which is evil. I was on the bus, and a friend of mine sat next to me. So I said a joke to him. I said, you have your gun on you? He said, yeah. I said, okay, now I feel safe. He said, you know, I pray every day that to the day I die, I shouldn't have to use it. I said, really? Why? He says, because I hope that I'll be an old man with great-grandchildren and I'll be able to look at this gun and say, boy, all these years, and I never did a thing with it. I said, okay. He said, you don't agree? I said, I'm not sure. There's still evil in the world. And part of loving Hashem, it says, O'aveh Hashem sinura. People who love Hashem hate evil. So if we know there are murderers lurking in the streets, I would want to make sure that they don't succeed, and sometimes that means a gun has to be used. What can I do? I'm not sure. I wouldn't pray that if need be, rather I use this than another innocent person be killed. They're...
I think he would agree with that. He's just glad that he hopes he's not the one chosen.
Oh, so I don't know why. It's a mitzvah. You're saving a person's life. What's the difference if you save a person's life by driving an ambulance or?
It's scary as maybe. You end up enjoying it, and you know, maybe there's a part. I don't know. I just think that even our heroes, that's big. But Judaism is very different. I mean, even our warriors, we needed it self-defense, but the people we look up to the most is the people, not necessarily, we don't glorify the lance, the sword. I mean, if we have to, we have to. We need it. I think it's scary when you start using it, you know, like Adam, I'm eating, I'm going to continue, right?
But I didn't hear you.
When they asked Adam in the garden, you know, like, did you eat? He said, I think the answer is in the present. I'm eating from the fruit. In other words, I like it. I'm going to continue to do it. I don't know if I can stop myself. I think that there's the element that the guy is afraid that even though it's necessary, I don't know, when I see these enemies that we have, there's a part of me that, you know, like we had to have Shmuel HaKatan who was going to make that curse because the other people, there was a little bit of enjoyment in doing it maybe. Couldn't
really?
Totally self-interest. So I think if I killed somebody, the bad guy, I would not just look at it as I had to do my duty. It would be something that would be pleasurable.
Really? I don't.
I agree with you. You know, if it gives you evil in the world, if someone says it, it's appropriate to stamp it out, then why would you pray that not to be?
Right?
But I think that, David Amelik did great, fantastic things, but for some reason he wasn't the one chosen.
Right, that's what I said to him, but I said, King Solomon's greatness was he lived in an era where he could do it. King David cleared the way.
Right, well,
we live in an era where there are threats. What can you do?
But you still could say, I hope it's not me, but if it has to be me, God forbid the guy should get away with this doing his job. Then, of course, I want to do it.
I hear. So coming back, Rav Harlap is saying part of when you want to gather that which is good, you also have to push away that which is evil. Part of it is gerushin, to push away the sitra acha, and then what's called the other side. Levaltim tzamakom. It shouldn't find place where it can hold on, latch on to things. And that's what the verse says, Vayetze harishon admoni kulo ka'aderet se'ar. The first son came out red, like as though he were a sheet covered with hair. That's to say that so as though he was pushed out. He came out of the womb. V'tafkid ze gamar be'odam be'beten imam. It's as though Yaakov Avinu finished his task still in utero, and after they came out, there are still sparks in Esav. Yaakov finished what he had done, but there are still holy souls in Esav. Yado chesed ba'akev Esav. That's the idea that Yaakov's holding on, and he's saying, Esav's born. I'm not done with you, Esav. You still have a lot of good in you that I'm still going to bring back.
That's very novel interpretation. Grab you down to the heel. I never heard that before.
I didn't either. But Chazal do tell us that when Esav's angel hits Yaakov in the thigh, so he's wounding the future, all the future, not all, but he's wounding future tzaddikim that would yet to come. So the idea, when Esav's born, Yaakov's holding on to his heel. He's saying, I'm still going to take the good out of you. I'm still going to bring people to do what's right. And Esav comes back, Esav's angel comes back and hits Yaakov, so to speak. The good in you, I'm still going to hurt. V'zeu soda galut. The secret behind exile is that we're out there because wherever we go, we're supposed to push away evil. We know that we have a job to bring back sparks. Wherever Jews are, they have a job to it says to even collect souls, to affect the world, so people convert, so people recognize what Judaism is. But part of the job is also to push away that which is evil. That's the idea of bringing to fruition what Yaakov tried to do.
Rabbi, one question, how do you define what's evil?
That's a great question. You need a good rabbi, because many people are out trying to push away evil what's evil is very, people's eyes. You better be sure.
Yeah. You have to work. Without the Torah, it's hard to define what's evil. I agree. It's one of the most fundamental concepts. Without the Torah,
that don't follow the Torah, and maybe you say, well, they're evil, or there's people that don't believe in God as well, because they're evil.
Agreed.
That goes back to your example about the soldier on the bus. If you asked him, would you like to use it on Hitler, he probably would say, fine. But the scary thing is, when you use it in a situation, God forbid, you get the wrong person. We saw that happen recently with the guy from Eritrea or something, but it could happen. And that's the scary part.
Like someone evil could be someone that hates Jews?
I don't want to give examples. I think that in each scenario it has to be you have to verify the halacha.
Between hating and trying to hurt too.
Right.
Somebody just doesn't like, you get people here, I can't stand blacks, I can't stand this. That's bad, it's not good. But that's a different than actually trying to hurt them. You know what I'm saying? To think about it, to do something in the art isn't good.
Well,
does that warrant any punishment? I don't know.
Like, if
He's talking on a broader level. He's saying in general, when we come to a place, we're supposed to be a source of light. Light pushes away darkness. He's not going into the specifics of who and how. He's saying when you have a Jewish community, when Jews come to a country, they're supposed to affect that country. Part of affecting that country is bringing light to that country. That's part of our job. Bringing light means we're pushing away darkness. That's what he calls the Sitra Achra, the other side. There are forces of evil, but our job is that our light is supposed to make it that they run away, that they say, this isn't my place anymore. And that's part of what we're taught about what Yaakov was doing in utero. Now, when the darkness is chased away, so then the sparks remain. And then we have the capacity of grabbing those sparks and uplifting them. And that's the idea. It says when we descended to Egypt, with Yaakov came each person in their home. Meaning not only Yaakov went into exile, but Hashem says, I'm going into exile with you. Ish, I think he's learning, is the Ribon Shel Olam is called Ish Milchama. Hashem comes down with us. Hashem says, you're not going into Egypt to become Egyptians. You're going into Egypt and I'm coming with you. Hashem promises Yaakov, I will go down to Egypt with you. It says Yaakov lived in Egypt for 17 years. Yaakov goes down to Egypt to reveal to his children what is this concept of galut. The idea of galut is that when you get here, you're supposed to give so much light that the darkness goes away. That's a vayechi Yaakov be'eretz Mitzrayim. What does it mean he lived in Egypt? That means that he was affecting Egypt. Life, as we've discussed, is the capacity to affect. And that's what Yaakov was teaching his children. We'll get there. So that's Yaakov. The idea of Yaakov is the one who grabbed the heel, is the one who affected his brother Esav, the one who tries to take what's good out of Esav and help it grow and help it connect. But the name Yisrael is a totally different concept. The name Yisrael represents the idea of overcoming external adversity, be it spiritual or physical. Kisarita im Elokim v'im Anashim. And Yisrael have that responsibility of chasing away the Sitra Acha. It's not just that, we're here doing what's right, and that's going to chase it away. No, there's a task of chasing it away. When they come to Egypt, the Egyptians say, we have to outsmart them, because otherwise they're going to reach a point where they're going to overcome us. What were they scared about? They were scared about the Jewish values. They were scared that they're going to outnumber us, and they've come here to affect us. They've come here to change us. So he's saying that's the name Israel, and that's the threat the Egyptians felt. The secret of the exile is from an aspect of Israel that's called Bnei Israel, the sons of Israel, that right? You see, the daughter of Pharaoh's own daughter converted to Judaism, right? For sure.
Romans were afraid when they started converting and this and that. That's when they got really hard.
Maybe that's what?
When we are effective. And I thought that the difference is that the one that's going out in the world, the other is to be this ideally role model here.
Where did you get that from? What you just said is mind-boggling to me.
Maybe Rav Kilstein's...
No, because the Talmud says that in the generation of the destruction of the temple, there were over 10,000 Romans that converted to Judaism. Yeah. But I never heard that the Romans saw that as a threat, and that's what made them come to the destruction.
That was just put together from this.
Ah.
That was the idea that, you know, what was the tipping point? What made the rulers in charge so afraid that they were going to clamp down, you know, the fact that they were going to lose their pagan identity. Their value system was actually on threat. When we're some tiny thing living in, what's it, Squareville, Skewerville, out in Muncie, you know, we're not such a threat. But when we're having some success and other people are adopting our values, right, it's scary.
Interesting guy, I never thought of it that way.
We're assimilating, it's terribly scary to us. But it's a part of the Goyim that our Rabbi Steinsoul said. There's some people who are anti-Semitic because they don't like the concept that we're chosen people. There are other people who are anti-Semitic because they want us to be doing our job and we're not doing it. That doesn't mean they're anti-Semitic, but they're disappointed in us. Because they know that we need a wife. Why would you use this whole shiur about being in exile? If you said to the Goyim there, you know, we're here to uplift and put our values, I think they would respect it more than if we're here to manufacture Hollywood trash. Anyway, who knows? I don't know. It's beyond me a lot of this. You picked the one I saw this year. It's hard to get along.
He goes now into a concept. We say that there are aspects that there are male aspects and female aspects. There's the female aspect represents the idea of taking care of the tent, taking care of the home, taking care of internally. The male aspect is what goes out and affects. The man's job is to be. We say there's the. In English, what's the wording for it? The
provider?
Ministry of the Interior and the ambassador. So the man's job is the ambassador. He has to deal externally. The woman's job is Ministry of the Interior. She has to run the home to ensure it runs correctly. As her partnering with the man, she gives him the capacity to do his job. It says in the merit of the women, the Jews were taken out of Egypt. The merit of the pious women, not the men. But it was the man's job to effect, meaning he had to do the job. She was the one who had the merits to get us there. Pharaoh calls in the women, and Pharaoh realizes that they're not the ones who are trying to change Egypt. So he says, join me. You women can be a part of my plan. And that's what he says, when a baby's born, I want you to kill him. Pharaoh thinks, if I can get rid of the men, and keep the women aren't threatening Egyptian society. What Paro doesn't realize is that if an Egyptian marries a woman, then his home is going to be a Jewish home. The Medrash says Paro made a big mistake, meaning even if he would have succeeded in what he planned on doing, it wouldn't have worked. And Paro only saw the threat he saw. He saw in the streets, who are the ones opening Chabad mobiles, etc.? It's the men. Paro thought the threat he was faced with was what he saw, which was the men. And that's why the Talmud says that when Paro called in the women, it says the women refused to do what Paro said unto them. So the Talmud says, why does it say the word unto them? So it says because the Torah is alluding to the idea that he tried to come unto them. And they refused. They risked their lives. They were refusing the king, but they refused. So Paro was, why was Paro trying to get them to transgress with him? He said, you want Israel to continue. I also want Israel to continue, but I want them to be more like you, not like the men. So when Paro invites them to transgress, Paro, on some level, senses that they are the future of Israel. He says, I'm willing to partner with you and be the future of Israel. Think about it. Paro, through his stars, might have seen that Moshe was going to grow up in his house. The son of Yocheved, who he was trying to seduce, was supposed to be brought up by him. So on some level he sensed, we are supposed to be partners in bringing the future of Israel. He was right, just not the way he thought. From Miriam comes the Mashiach, who is also has roots in all kinds of places in the world, but not the way Paro was envisioning. Moshe grows up in the king's house specifically. Why wasn't Moshe concerned that the servants, why wasn't Pharaoh concerned that his servants would say, you're bringing up a Jewish boy? You told us to kill all Jewish boys. Why are you bringing up Jewish boys? Because when Paro tried to get the Moshe's mother to sin with him, and then they saw that Yocheved was nursing the baby, so then they thought, no one knew what happened behind closed doors. So in Egypt, people thought that Moshe was Pharaoh's biological son. Remember, Pharaoh had tried to convince Moshe's mother, our sages say, to transgress with him. So then Pharaoh could bring up Moshe in his home because everyone thought he was Pharaoh's son. But Am Yisrael knew that he was Amram's son. But Am Yisrael at that point was on a level that no one would rat on Amram. No one would say, hey, you know, it's not Pharaoh's own child. And when Moshe sees two Hebrews fighting and he says, why are you hitting your friend? What does he answer? He says, who appointed you as the judge here? What they were saying is, you're a Jew just like us. We know the truth. You're not an Egyptian. The Egyptians can let you live in the palace, but we know. And then Moshe says, oh no, now I'm in trouble. I've only been around and Pharaoh's given me the preferential treatment because he's not going to tell anyone that the women turned him down and he didn't do it. So he's okay living the lie and the Egyptians are okay living the lie. But if the Jews are telling me now, we know you're a Jew just like us. We know your mother really didn't do anything with Pharaoh. That's why when that became revealed, that's what Moshe says, now it's revealed. He's saying until now it was covered up. The cover up kept me alive. Pharaoh could let me grow up in his house. My mother, Yocheved, could take care of me, and everyone thinks everything's good because the Egyptians think I'm Pharaoh's biological son. The Jews are keeping secret. No one's telling that I'm really Amram's son. Everything's fine. Once it becomes public that I'm not really Pharaoh's biological son, there's no way Pharaoh's going to let me live. Because if you think about it, if a prince kills a worker, why would the king want the prince dead? He's the prince. Ah, Rav Chalap says, now what's revealed is that I'm not really his biological son. And that's what it says. Pharaoh heard this. Pharaoh heard that people were talking already. He's not his biological son. So then Pharaoh said, how am I going to explain why I'm leaving him here? He has to die. Now Pharaoh's being embarrassed. Egypt is the mother of promiscuity. So now Pharaoh couldn't do what he wanted with these women? Pharaoh says, no. Now I can't let him live. Moshe, we have one more paragraph. Should we go for it?
Yeah?
Moshe detained circumcising his son. That's because Moshe loved the people of Israel so much. Moshe knew that he would ultimately have descendants that would be double the amount of the people of Israel. And Hashem told him, see, I have seen how much the Jewish people are going to suffer. The Medrash says, it doesn't say I've seen, but rather it says, see, I have seen. Hashem said to Moshe, I've seen two things. You see one thing. I see two things. You see that they're destined to greatness. They're going to come to Sinai and accept the Torah. But I see that after they accept the Torah, very shortly afterwards, they're going to serve a golden calf. And even so, I'm not holding them accountable for that today. Right now, I see what's happening now, and I'm going to take them out of Egypt. So Hashem is telling Moshe, go take them out of Egypt because see, I have seen their suffering. Hashem tells him, I know they're not only going to receive the Torah, I know they're also going to turn their back on me. I know they're going to turn against me and go with the golden calf. So Moshe knew that. Moshe also knew Hashem would tell him, let me wipe them out and make you into a great nation. So Moshe says, I don't want to be focused on this son that was just born, from whom Hashem is going to say, all of the people of Israel should come from him. I have to be focused on the people of Israel. If I start thinking this boy is ultimately going to father double the people of Israel, let me work on him, let me circumcise him, let me deal with him. Moshe said, I have to overcome my bias. My focus has to be the good of the people. My focus can't be my own son's circumcision, and therefore I'll delay going to take them out. They're suffering every day in Egypt. I have to go deal with them. My own son needs to be circumcised. I have to have a greater love for the people. If I'm their leader, my desire for their good has to overcome my desire that my son be correct, he be circumcised, he be holy, he be pure.
It's hard to understand.
Yeah.
I mean, especially since with the way things play out, you know, it's the children of Yehuda who had the lead role down the road. The descendants of Moshe, not so much, even though at the point we were in the parsha, you wouldn't have thought so. You know,
I would say take the next step.
Yeah.
First of all, that's the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu. That Moshe did not, you could say Hashem told him, but he didn't appoint his son to any position, even though Korach has all the claims against him. We don't find Moshe's children becoming leaders. And that's, on the one hand, it's the Ribbono Shel Olam saying it, but on the other hand, Moshe could have played games. Yeah. He could have put them in leadership positions, and he did not. We don't find them there.
You know, this they learned that Torah cannot be inherited.
Oh, very nice. But
even if your father is Moshe Rabbeinu.
Yeah. That's
But it's mind-boggling because you almost think, you know, first of all, I don't understand because it's before I received the Torah. Hey, you can't say I'm not going to circumcise my son.
Well, I don't know if people are dying.
Yeah.
You know, the question is, think about what Hashem's message is back to Moshe. Because Hashem doesn't let him get away with it. Moshe says, you sent me to save the whole nation, I better go. My own son needs to be circumcised. I better go. The Ribbono Shel Olam says, you're going to die. Take care of your boy.
Right.
What did the Ribbono Shel Olam answer him? I'm saying, look at the continuation of the story.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Moshe says, they won't believe me. What is Moshe saying? He's saying, they won't want to believe that the redemption will come, that Pharaoh will just tell them, go. That they're going to say, we were waiting for something much greater than that. Hashem tells Moshe, go and I will send you. What does that mean, go and I will send you? Hashem said to him, first you go. First you have to work on yourself to be on the level that you're willing to go to Paro. Are you willing to dedicate yourself to work on behalf of the Jewish people? I will send you. But first I want you to be on the point of that dedication to the people. First, lecha, I want you to go. I want you to be at a point where you're ready to go. Moshe began by saying, they're not going to be ready. What, I'm going to say Pharaoh's going to send us out of Egypt? They're not going to be behind me on that. Hashem says, you're not behind you on that. Work on yourself first. Lecha, first you believe in it. Then you can go. A guy met me this week, he asked me, how are you supposed to fundraise? I said, you have to first believe in what you're doing. If you believe, if you really believe that what you're doing is right, then you look at it as, I'm giving the other person an opportunity. I told him a story. I said to him, you should know, I once asked a person for a donation, and he cursed me like, he really, really wrote me a very, very nasty email. He said, you should know, even though the guy's a multimillionaire, and we have a close relationship, I have never again given him the opportunity to donate to anything I do. And in my mind, I am punishing him the worst punishment, and I will never bli neder. I will not give him the opportunity. He could donate to any other cause. With me, he will not donate.
Well, this is the Navi says, no? That the Rasha, even when he tells you...
He's not a Rasha. He's not a Rasha. But I said to him, but that's because I believe that what I'm doing is right. And I believe that I'm not giving him the opportunity. I gave him the opportunity once. No. There are things that you say, look... The guy could have said no. The guy could have ignored no. The guy could have ignored my email. The guy could have said no. The guy did not have to write.
He really did wrong.
He doesn't have to give. The Navi says that when a Rasha gives, this Rasha, stingy person, he finally wants to give. That's a guy that he will give. He will give it to a bum that will go on 5 years.
Say that. I'm
not saying that necessarily, but you know, you shackle here and there, whatever.
It's like
trying to help not to buy beers when they're not living on the street. But that's different. But I understand what you're saying, but I don't have a hard time with it. See, the same thing when you talked about this friend who went off the derech and now is some reform up. Cut someone off when you could tell him, this is the reason why I didn't want to get back to you. But if you're ready to change this or that, or maybe you have to make that call yourself. But to say to someone, I'm not giving him another chance without him knowing the reason
he
why.
He has the whole world.
What?
He has the whole world to go to. He
but
can donate everywhere
yourself,
he wants.
You said he's losing an opportunity.
Of course he's losing an opportunity.
Agree
with you. When, not only because of, I believe in the causes that I fundraise for, but also because I think every cause I fundraised for, I've donated to. That means you're not losing a percentage. Where else does he have that opportunity?
I'm just saying, if you're in a position, at some point, we all make a value judgment. Boom. this guy affects me negatively or whatever, I can't let him use me, or I can't do it, whatever the reason. On the other hand, like you said before, guy comes up to you and, okay, big difference. That guy's thinking the first step. I killed, I raped, I wanted to fix myself. At what point do you owe it to let the person know the reason he's cut off? Or you don't. I don't know.
I don't want to answer you now because I'm too biased. Yeah. I need to think it through.
Right
now, you know, let me think about it.
Yeah. Okay.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you're right.
I don't know.
I don't know.
And also, if it'll weaken you in other areas and you know, just doing this will put time away. You have to know yourself.
If I answer you now, I will be defending my position and not thinking it through honestly. Let me think it through.
Come up and you know, try it anyway. Okay.
I don't...
Keep going. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we're up to the last line. About this was the tradition, Pakod Yifkod. The tradition that they had was that if someone comes the natural path and goes to the king and says, I want to take the people for 3 days' journey to sacrifice before Hashem, you have to see Pakod Pakanti, that Hashem is behind that. That if someone can come to the king and get him to agree to take the people on a 3 days' journey to take him out, which technically, Chazal tell us that's what happened in the end. Pharaoh comes and says, get out, take your family, take everyone, but after 7 days he comes chasing after them. That means technically the redemption began with an approval, you can go serve Hashem. So they were supposed to recognize within that that there was... That was Hashem's hand as well. It could be, Rav Chalap doesn't spell it out, but it could be that this is, this goes back to his first concept, that if you can take the people out of Egypt and they could sacrifice before Hashem, then you have gathered the sparks from Egypt and uplifted them. You've taken them to sacrifice. It could be. I'm not sure. So we discussed the idea of collecting sparks, collecting the good from the world, uniting it, uplifting it. We discussed the idea that there's a concept of not taking the good out of the bad, but uniting worlds and uplifting them. We discussed the idea that in Egypt, our job was, the men were the threat to Egypt, because their job, they said, we came to Egypt to effect. We came to Egypt to uplift Egypt, and that's why the Egyptians felt threatened, but they felt threatened by the men, not by the women. We said that Pharaoh tried to seduce the Yocheved. Technically, no one knew what happened in the room. Our sages tell us he didn't succeed, and that Miriam and Amram were, that Yocheved and Amram were the parents of Moshe. But that's what gave Moshe the capacity to grow up in Amram's palace, in Pharaoh's palace, because people were saying he's Pharaoh's own son. We said that when Moshe killed the person, so then they said, we're going to tell on you. Now we're going to tell everyone that you're really Amram's son. And that's when Pharaoh felt like he had to kill Moshe. We said that Moshe detained circumcising his son because he said, even though Hashem revealed to me that from this child will come double the number of the people of Israel, but right now I have to look at now. Just like Hashem says, I know ultimately they will sin with the golden calf, but I look at now. Moshe says, I also have to look at now. Right now the people are in danger, they need my help. Hashem shows up and says, no, circumcise your son first. But Moshe's thought was, I have to have that love. And finally, when Moshe says, they won't believe in me, Moshe says they won't want to believe that the redemption is going to come because Pharaoh approved. Hashem says, no, that's Pakod Pakanti. They have to see within that that that's me also. But first, Lecha, you have to believe in it, Moshe, before you go and try to take them out. You have to believe in it, then you'll be able to take them out. And that's what Moshe ultimately does. Moshe goes and takes them out. Yeah.